Welcome to A Couple Cooks, a show celebrating the joy of home cooking. I'm Sonia Overheiser.
And I'm Alex.
And we're a husband and wife who love to cook.
Join us each week for stories, seasonal recipes, and inspiration for cooking at home and eating well.
For more, you can find us on our blog, acouplecooks.com. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
To episode 4 of the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Where we talk about snow and Italy.
And other things, too. We've got a great show today. We can't wait to share it with you. We've got some fantastic recipes for the cold weather, including our favorite stew with some tomato, lentil, artichoke deliciousness. We've got some thoughts on cooking from scratch related to some comments from readers and listeners.
We're talking about seasonal eating and all things good, fresh food.
And we caught up with an expert on seasonal eating. Maybe you've heard of him. His name is Mario Batali.
Mario Batali.
Yes. He is wonderful in person. It was so much fun to catch up with him and hear his thoughts on seasonal eating and local farmers. And then we throw in a little bit about bucket lists.
Stay tuned. Snowed today in Indianapolis, the first sign of winter here in the Midwest, and it was actually quite pretty.
I hate to admit it, but it was.
If it's going to be cold, it might as well look nice. And we drove all around the city for a few adventures, and then we came back and wanted to just get our house as hygge as possible. We lit candles, cleaned up a bit, threw out some blankets.
And if you don't know what hygge is, you should listen to episode 3.
Hygge. Anyway, ultimate hygge food is soup, and so we picked out a soup for the recipe of the week.
Yes, it's a tomato artichoke lentil stew.
Sorry, a stew, not a soup.
Yes. There's not quite sure exactly the distinction. Maybe that a stew is a little more chunky.
A little less brothy. And a lot more fun.
But this stew is one of our favorite recipes that we've ever made, I would say. Would you agree, Alex?
I do like it.
And it actually was born out of a little bit of a disagreement in our marriage.
Like all good things.
Alex had an idea of this stew he wanted to make with lentils and artichokes. And for some reason, I thought that it sounded disgusting.
So much so that she didn't even want me to try it, let alone ever talk about it again in the future.
So I said, okay, fine, just make this stew, but it sounds weird. And he whipped up a batch. And let me just say that when Alex gets in the kitchen, it's kind of a wild card. You never know if it's going to be the best thing you've ever tasted or fall flat on its face.
Which doesn't really concern me. I like to fly right in the face of fear. I'm willing to eat anything, even if it only tastes so-so.
So Alex did his experiment with the stew, and I tasted it, and it was one of those, you were right, honey, moments.
And I don't get too many of those wins, so it was extra special.
So this stew has some lentils in it. It has some artichokes, canned artichokes, which you can get at any grocery, and it has some kale, some tomatoes. And yeah, it's pretty easy and it's very delicious. We actually ended up serving it on Christmas Eve last year and it was a big hit with our family. So it's delicious. It's got the Italian flavors going on and we topped ours with a little bit of shaved Parmesan.
And what I really like about this recipe is that for us, having lentils and tomatoes and artichoke hearts in the pantry is pretty normal, and kale and Parmesan in the fridge is pretty normal, which means at any point we could just whip this up if we're looking for a recipe out of the pantry, and we don't necessarily have to plan really far ahead.
And kale is in season right now. It's cool weather. So it's in the fall, the winter, and the spring. And we can get it basically year-round here in Indianapolis. So
it's extra beautiful today. I was at the farmer's market last summer, farmer's market of the season, and it was snowing, and there weren't many people there, but there was some beautiful kale.
So give it a try. Let us know if you try it out. It's time for our recipe picks of the week, where Alex and I pick a recipe we haven't tried, but we would like to. Alex, what you got this week?
Well, I was perusing the latest Vegetarian Times magazine and ran into this recipe for leeks from the book V is for Vegetables, and I really like the idea of it. So it's a whole roasted leek recipe, and then it has a tangerine, I think, yes, tangerine vinaigrette on it. And so you take the leeks and you cook the whole thing long rather than chopping them all up and add this fresh vinaigrette on top. I think it sounds really nice. If we hadn't already planned our Thanksgiving menu, I probably would have tried to throw it in.
Tangerine, huh?
Yeah.
Sounds fancy.
It's like the fanciest orange of all.
Nice.
Thanks. What do you have?
Well, I picked another soup.
Of course you did.
Because I just love soups and stews in the cool weather. They're so nourishing. It's a great way to get a lot of nutrients in a relatively healthy meal. That seems really comforting.
You guys can't see her right now, but she's got about 14 blankets on.
I picked a spicy peanut stew with butternut squash and chickpeas. Mm. It is from the blog Oh Lady Cakes.
She has a particularly gorgeous website, doesn't she?
She does. It's Ashley Werner, and this soup just looks fantastic. It's got a lot of aromatic spices in it, some ginger, cumin, turmeric, cinnamon, some fire-roasted tomatoes, and then that's mixed with peanut butter, actually, and there's some spicy peanuts you can put on top as a garnish. It just sounds so flavorful.
Yum. And it sounds warm without being overly hot, spicy.
Hot. Exactly. Yeah, I don't see, other than the spicy peanuts, I don't see a lot of spice. Oh, there's a serrano pepper. But I think you could kind of control it. So it's just flavorful versus spicy if you're not huge into the spicy taste.
Sounds great.
So we will include both of these recipes in our show notes. Let us know if you give them a try. So if you follow our food blog or our Instagram feed, or follow other food bloggers, you may think that all of our meals are intentionally crafted from a recipe and beautifully styled.
Aren't they?
Newsflash, no, they're not. We're real people. We get home from work on a weeknight, and a lot of times we don't have energy to cook from a recipe, and we just find ourselves throwing together food from our pantry and our fridge.
And this has become pretty normal for us, but we had a few people over on Instagram ask us about this very thing this week.
We did. Both Lauren and Bryn asked a question about how do you learn to cook from scratch?
Well, good question, guys. How do you learn that? Well, I think learning is the key part to that question. So for us, we learn through watching cooking shows, just reading cookbook after cookbook, and trying to jump in by following recipes before we tried making our own. And I think it's really helpful to find a niche that you're excited about. For us, it was Italian food. We mentioned we went to our honeymoon in Italy and fell in love with Italian food. So that's really where we started to explore. And once you get into cookbooks and you start seeing the way flavors are paired, you can start being able to ad lib pretty quickly. With Italian food, you'll find that tons of recipes have garlic, so pretty much any time I'm in the kitchen, I'm mincing up garlic. In the summer, I have fresh herbs all right outside the kitchen, so we run outside, snip some oregano, basil, thyme, and get these fresh herbs in our recipes. And by the time you have olive oil, garlic, and herbs, you can pretty much do anything you want, and it's going to taste good and have that Italian flair.
So what you're saying is that we should start cooking from recipes first before we can kind of learn those principles that the recipes are trying to teach.
Absolutely. And if you're really excited about this, you can find some books. Like, there's a book called The Flavor Bible that kind of pair up these types of flavors go with these type of flavors. And it's really helpful to see how you can mix and match foods and spices and flavorings in fun new ways.
Right. But I think it takes quite a bit of experience to get to a place where you think of cooking and food in that kind of a way. I think for us, as Alex mentioned, we just started cooking from recipes. And the more experience we got, the more confident we got in the kitchen.
And I think that's key, just having that confidence. I've made this 3 times and it worked out, so this time I'm going to sub some, I don't know, black beans for the chicken and see how it turns out.
Yeah. And I think what I said about confidence, I mean, Alex has a lot of confidence. He also has no fear in the kitchen, so he is willing to fall on his face in a recipe.
And eat it anyway.
And learn the lesson. So one way that you can kind of start out without a recipe, kind of from scratch, a good way to start is with a soup, since we're talking about soups this episode. So usually when you start out on a soup, you'll dice up an onion, maybe mince some garlic, dice a carrot and celery, and then you'll start your olive oil going. Put in your onion and saute it until it gets translucent. Add the garlic for a little bit. Maybe add some carrots and celery. Get all those aromatics going. And then you add your broth and your other, like your beans or your tomatoes. Simmer that up. Add some greens at the end. They just need to go in at the end and they'll wilt right up. That's a recipe for a soup that you can try just totally from scratch. And then once you've kind of mastered that, you can start venturing into other types of flavors.
So it's one of these worlds, like salting to taste, that seems pretty overwhelming at first. How can you salt to taste when you don't know what it's going to taste like? But once you get into it, I think it's really fun, and you'll find yourself making new recipes all the time. You'll probably not be able to even follow a recipe because you have all sorts of ideas for what you want to do to it.
So get in the kitchen and start playing.
It seems that seasons have become a theme of this show, intentionally or not. Winter has come upon us. And we're thinking about seasons, which makes me think about seasonal eating, this rather foodie term of late.
It's a little bit hipster, I would say.
Look at that guy in the beard eating his seasonal food. But that doesn't really seem fair, because I would say seasonal eating is just normal eating.
Yeah, I mean, for thousands of years, people have been eating seasonally. It's only in the past, I would say, 50 or so years that we've had the technology to eat non-seasonally.
And I think seasonal eating is just a great way to embrace the best that food has to offer. It's not any sort of painful withholding of crappy tomatoes in January. It is enjoying delicious tomatoes in July.
Yeah, and we've learned so much about seasonal eating just from going to local farmers markets and even just following food blogs and food magazines. You'll see asparagus pop up in April, and all the recipes will be about peas and asparagus. And then in July, you'll see all the tomato recipes. And you just start to learn this rhythm of when to expect certain foods to appear. And that's seasonal eating.
And I think one of the great things is that those foods taste better when they're in season and they're cheaper. And so you get to celebrate, for example, one of my favorites, seasonal strawberries in May and June, that just taste absolutely incredible. and you can buy a huge box of them for way less than you could any other time of the year, and just truly enjoy that piece of the year, that moment where strawberries just taste like heaven. And I don't really want strawberries the rest of the year after that.
Agree. So one of the ways that I did not appreciate seasonal eating when I was growing up, my mom made this peach pie every summer, and I loved it. Our family just adores it. But I never connected the fact that peach pie in the summer was because peaches were best in the summer. And since then, I've learned much more about this peach pie and how the peaches have to be perfect. And I've learned that peaches only are seasonal in the summer in a certain months. And
now I feel like each summer when you see those peaches in Indiana here, it's usually late June, start to get ripe. You get really excited and you want to come home and make a peach pie.
Exactly. And I can add a link to that peach pie in the show notes, even though it is the dead of winter here.
Get you pumped.
You can wait.
Put it on your Pinterest until next summer.
Exactly. Or maybe you're listening to this in the
Australia.
Future.
In the future in Australia.
So speaking of seasonal eating and local farmers, we thought we would catch up with an expert on local eating. And seasonal eating, he's a big one.
Get excited.
Get excited. His name is Mario Batali. Maybe you've heard of him. He is a restaurateur, TV show host, cookbook author. He has started these Eataly complexes celebrating Italian food, which I need to visit. And we caught up with him here in Indianapolis at Market District and asked him his thoughts on seasonal eating.
We wanted to talk to you a little bit about local farming and local foods. We are big supporters of local farmers, and we know you are too. In fact, you say that farmers are the true rock stars. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Well, in a culture where anybody who does anything that you appreciate suddenly becomes misnomered a rock star, whether they're a football player or the local donut maker, what occurred to me is that if people really want to find out the way to make better food, as opposed to trying to figure out what the equipment is, the shopping is what really makes the difference. And although cooks have been considered the rock stars in the world of the entertainment business of restaurants, the real rock stars are the farmers that continue to create maybe things to my spec, but things that they can also sell to regular people. So if regular people can buy the same magnificent, crazy, beautiful broccoli rabe that I do, and I know they can cook it as well as I can, then the true person in the rock star business isn't me. It becomes the cook who buys it and the rock star chef. I mean, the rock star farmer who provides it for us.
Completely agree. Do you have any tips for our listeners on how they could get started eating locally?
Well, identify where the farmers live. I mean, we're in the Midwest, so there are a lot of them around here. And you identify who they are, where they sell their stuff. There are websites all over the country. If you look up farmers market and put your zip code in, they'll find you one. So start doing that. Realize that in the Midwest, there will be snow on the ground starting even today. So it will be a little bit inhospitable to buy everything local, but what the culture of local shopping and farming and eating has often forgotten is pickling and preserving. So while things are really inexpensive in, say, August, September, October, when everything's being harvested, start pickling, start making pies, start making jams, in which case then even in the depths of winter when there's nothing even vaguely alive in your backyard, you are eating something that has been fermented or set aside so that you can eat it year-round.
Fantastic. What's your favorite type of pickle?
You know, my family is a huge repertoire of pickles. Yeah. So I'd say that one of my favorites is my Aunt Marty's dilly beans. I'm a big fan of my dad's hot and sour dills, but I'd have to say that perhaps my favorite is my mom's bread and butters.
Nice.
Because there's a little sweetness to it and it's bright. I mean, but we put a lot of mustard seeds in that one too, which I like that little caviar crunch.
Yeah, for sure.
What's
so,
your favorite pickle?
Good question. I would say a good refrigerator pickle because they're easy and quick.
And crunchy.
Exactly. So we've been looking through your book, America Farm to Table. We love it. There are so many beautiful, colorful recipes. And we wanted to know if you had one specific one we should try. We love eating vegetables, so something kind of vegetable-based.
How about, because everybody has carrots. The carrot fritelle will change your way in understanding how simple stuff can be transformed texturally and flavorly in a second. It's one of my favorites. Other than that, I really like also the pasta alla norma, which is eggplant, which will be in season. And these eggplant and angel hair turrets are a little more complicated, but they're so much fun.
That looks fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
It was so fun to hang out with Mario, don't you think?
Yeah, and that was a busy guy. He was signing about 400 million cookbooks for all of his fans up at the Market District, but it was really a great opportunity.
And to bond over pickles.
Exactly.
One of your favorite foods ever.
I love pickle juice.
Weird. We'll put that recipe for our refrigerator pickles in the show notes. And you should check out his book as well, America Farm to Table. So we're almost out of time for today.
We are.
But I thought we could talk about something fun like bucket lists. Do you have one? I would say maybe on my bucket list was interviewing Mario Batali.
Check. one step closer to dying.
I actually don't have a ton on my bucket list, which is surprising. One thing I had was to catch a fish and eat it, which I'd never done, being a suburban raised girl.
Even in Minnesota, where there are 10,000 fishing lakes.
Yes. So recently, this summer, we were in Alaska and I caught a fish and ate it. It was wonderful. So I got that one done too.
Check.
I think the only other real thing on my bucket list is to write a book. So I'm going to work on that one.
We're just going to stick you in the attic with a typewriter and see what happens.
Typewriter?
Is that how you write books?
How about you? You have to have something on your bucket list.
Not really. Well,
marry someone named Sonia.
Done. There's one thing. It is to go to a restaurant up in Chicago called Alinea.
Oh, good one.
We've had several friends go there, and it's one of these Michelin 3-star, super hyper fancy, million tiny small course places, and probably cost $1 million, so we should save up our money and get there sometime.
Good idea.
Maybe we'll win the lottery.
I'll let you take me there.
Okay. So that's about it.
Yeah, so let us know what's on your bucket list.
Especially if it's food related.
Right, but it does not have to be food related. It can be any.
If you want to go skydiving, let us know.
If you want to climb Mount Everest or, I don't know.
Build a small house.
There you go. Or tiny house, what are those things called?
Is that, yes, tiny house.
Tiny house.
In Iceland.
I'll find a link to that and put it in the show notes too.
So, all right.
That's all we have for today. We hope you enjoyed our show. For more recipes and inspiration, see our website, acouplecooks.com, or follow us on Instagram @acouplecooks.